House comes to oral questions. Question number one is in the name of the Honourable Paul Goldsmith.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Minister of Finance. Does he stand by all the statements, policies and actions?
The Honourable Grant Robertson.
Mr. Speaker, yes. In particular, the government's economic policies, which have delivered economic growth of 0.5% in the June quarter and annual average growth of 2.4% in the year. Under this government's solid economic management, the New Zealand economy continues to outperform Australia, Canada, the Euro area, Japan, the UK and the OECD average.
How does he think his government's economic policies are working when annual GDP growth has fallen to 2.1% year on year and just 0.5% per person?
Well, Mr. Speaker, I believe that because all around New Zealand I see people in work. I see today nominally New Zealand's GDP reached $300 billion for the first time, which was in excess of where it was predicted to be when we took over, or in the pre-election fiscal update anyway, Mr. Speaker. So I go on the evidence I see all around me, Mr. Goldsmith.
Is he saying that New Zealanders should be happy with 0.5% per person GDP growth?
Oh, Mr. Speaker, on this side of the House, we will never be satisfied. We will always strive to go further and faster and better, Mr. Speaker.
Does he think Winston Peters' September 2017 prediction that the country has dark days ahead was helpful? And do we just have to accept those dark days have arrived?
No. There is absolutely no responsibility for an opposition member's statement from September 2017.
Supplementary. Does he agree with the ANZ's assessment that, quote, the broader narrative that economic momentum is slowly running out of puff was confirmed in today's GDP figures? And if so, what's he doing to restore the nation's puff?
Mr. Speaker, if the member read the whole of the ANZ document, he would have noted that their statement that trading partner growth has been softening and that there's a small open economy, that's a growth anchor to be particularly concerned about, Mr. Speaker. That is exactly the issue that New Zealand faces at this time. But we do stand here today with annual average growth of 2.4%, faster than many of our trading partners, and I would note, Mr. Speaker, larger than it was on average across the National Party's time in government, where it was 2.2%.
Why does he think business investment was negative last quarter?
Well, Mr. Speaker, I'm sure, as the member does, as we go around the country and we talk to business leaders, we know many of them in export industries are looking across the world and they are seeing that there is a slowdown in the global economy. They are concerned about the orders that are coming through from offshore. This is common in a small open economy like New Zealand. The good news, Mr. Speaker, is we are well positioned to deal with this. We have low public debt, we have operating surpluses forecast, and we have unemployment at historically low levels. The New Zealand economy is in good shape, but we are facing global headwinds.
So what is his plan to grow the economy?
Speaker, I'm delighted, and obviously there'll need to be an interchange between us. Well, Mr. Speaker, there's just so much to be able to deal with, and that's the issue. So let's kick off dealing with productivity, an issue that the previous government ignored completely. $40 billion worth of capital spending going into our infrastructure around New Zealand. A $300 million venture capital fund just announced in the budget to be able to spur on our entrepreneurs to the next stage of their development, Mr. Speaker. The massive investment that's going into skills, into training. Again, after 9 years where active labour market policies were put on hold, we're out there supporting people to get into work, Mr. Speaker. We want to build a productive, sustainable, inclusive economy and clean up the mess that we were left with.
So why does he think, after delivering two budgets, the last including $3.8 billion of new spending, economic growth has still slowed to barely 2% and business confidence remains so low?
Mr. Speaker, I want to help the member out here. These are the June quarter GDP figures, the period ending on the 30th of June. The budget that had the $3.8 billion per annum of new operating spending and $10 billion of capital spending starts on the 1st of July. So the member is just a little confused there.
Question number two, Kiritapu Allen.
Mr Speaker, my question is to the Minister of Finance. What recent reports has he seen on the New Zealand economy?
Oh, well, Mr Speaker, more good news worthy of repeating. Today's Stats New Zealand released GDP data for the June quarter. It shows the New Zealand economy continued to grow, with an expansion of 0.5%, coming in slightly ahead of market expectations, and an annual average growth rate of 2.4%. GDP per capita was up 0.8% from a year ago. I'm also pleased to report to the House that in nominal terms, the New Zealand economy reached $300 billion at the 30th of June, which is larger than was forecast at the pre-election fiscal update.
Supplementary, sir. What industries contributed to economic growth in the June quarter?
Oh, Mr Speaker, Statistics New Zealand said that the services industries, which are more domestically orientated, led GDP growth in June with quarterly growth of 0.7%. Our primary industries expanded by 0.7%, showing solid underlying fundamentals in these parts of our economy. The data today also showed the impact of global economic volatility is having on the economy. Our manufacturing sector is the most exposed to what is going on in the rest of the world, and activity in New Zealand's good-producing industries was down by 0.2% in the quarter. It's worth noting that our goods-producing industries are up, though, 1.8% from a year ago, which does highlight the resilience of those who work in these industries.
Supplementary, sir. How does New Zealand's growth rate compare to the rest of the world?
Oh, Mr Speaker, we all know that New Zealand has a small open economy that makes a living from selling things to the rest of the world. So it is important to keep our relative position to the rest of the world in context. It's pleasing to see that on comparable figures, our June quarter growth from a year ago is stronger than Australia, Canada, the European Union, Japan, the UK and the OECD average. Mr Speaker, while we are facing global headwinds, the New Zealand economy has strong underlying fundamentals.
The Honourable Paul Goldsmith.
How does New Zealand's per person growth compare with the OECD average?
Mr Speaker, our per capita growth that we have in this quarter of 0.8% is indeed lower than we would want it to be. But that's because we have to turn around 9 long years of not having a economic strategy based on productivity or sustainability, rather than members' prescription of increasing house prices and increasing population.
Question number three, the Honourable Dr Nick Smith.
Thank you, Mr Speaker. My question is for the Minister for Māori Crown Relations, Te Arawhiti. Does he agree with Mana Whenua that their land should be returned at Ihu Matau and that the government should, quote, negotiate with Fletchers for the return of Ihu Matau to its rightful owners, close quote?
The Honourable Kelvin
Davis. Mr Speaker, it's not my place to agree or disagree with Mana Whenua, but instead to respect their opinions and views. Our focus is on supporting a resolution that respects the mana of all parties, including Mana Whenua, the Crown and Fletchers.
There you go.
Supplementary, does he agree with the Maori King that the land should be returned to Maori ownership?
Mr Speaker, as I said, it's not my place to agree or to disagree, but to instead to respect the opinions and views of all those involved, including the Māori King.
I'll go here. We generally have two supplementaries first.
Does he agree with the Acting Prime Minister, Winston Peters, that any involvement of the Crown in purchasing the land would compromise the principle of full and final settlement?
Mr Speaker, I take great interest in the views of the Right Honourable Winston Peters, and I respect the views of most people when it comes to this whole situation.
Somebody question.
The Right Honourable Winston Peters.
Who, on what date and about what land said this, quotes, "The owner of that land is Fletcher Residential. They have indicated that they are happy to sit down and to talk with some of the Māori groups that are concerned. The member has made representations to me along those lines. I would be happy to facilitate that because I think there is the capacity on that site to come to a common sense solution," unquote.
Mr Speaker.
As far as he has responsibility, which is a bit hard to tell, but we'll go.
I believe that comment was made by the Honourable Dr Nick Smith, then Minister of Building and Housing, on the 18th of February 2016, he was speaking of Ihumata.
Supplementary.
Order.
Can the minister confirm that the reason the issue has turned to custard over this land is that Labor...
Order. The member will resume his seat. His question will be with an order. I'm going to give him a last chance today to word a question in order without losing it.
Supplementary. Can the minister confirm that the issue regarding this land has become so contentious because Labor and Green MPs in opposition made promises to protesters that have not been fulfilled?
No.
Has a government contribution of a loan or any financial support been considered at any stage in respect of supporting the purchase of this land?
Mr. Speaker, I have no financial responsibility or no responsibility for loans in this regard.
Supplementary. Has the minister been involved in any discussions in respect of this land in which a Crown financial contribution, loan or any other support was considered?
No.
Will the minister visit the site and meet with the protesters given the high expectations he's created as minister responsible for Crown Māori relations?
Mr. Speaker, I reject the premise of his assertion that I'm creating high expectations.
Will...
Order.
If the members want their member to be able to answer the question, they will be quiet. Especially Mr. Hudson.
Will the minister visit the site and meet with protesters?
Mr. Speaker, quite possibly. It depends on the timing. But again, I go back to my previous answer that I haven't raised any expectations because I haven't made comment on this issue.
Right. Question number four, Priyanka Radhakrishnan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Minister of Transport. What progress has he made, if any, on the Auckland Transport Alignment Project?
The Honourable Phil Twyford.
Good news, Mr. Speaker. Earlier this week, I turned the side on another Auckland Transport Alignment project with Auckland Mayor Phil Goff. We are transforming the Puhanui rail station into an efficient, modern and user-friendly rail and bus interchange. And this was only possible because of our landmark, fully funded $28 billion Auckland Transport Alignment Project with Auckland Council.
Supplementary. When will construction be completed?
This project will be completed within 18 months and it will ease the pressure on Auckland's transport system that events like hosting APEC will create. Work will also start in the coming weeks on upgrading State Highway 20B, which runs between the station and the airport, and this will also be completed by 2021.
Supplementary. What will this mean for access to Auckland Airport?
Well, this is one of the Transport Agency's big priorities in Auckland right now. There will be a bus service using dedicated lanes to begin with, and in the future, it will become part of a rapid transit route connecting Manukau and Botany with Puanui and the airport. This means that anyone with access to the rail network will have access to a 10-minute trip to the airport from that station.
What other progress has been made on the Auckland Transport Alignment Project?
Well, progress includes, but is not limited to, the Puhoi to Warkworth motorway construction. Construction is due to start soon on the K Road Enhancement and Cycleway project. 15 new electric train units have been ordered and are due to arrive within this financial year. The Albany Station Park and Ride extension is in construction, as is safety improvements in the Dome Valley. The detailed design work is underway on the Matakana Link Road, and the Eastern Busway is being built as we speak. And Mr. Speaker, there's much more to come.
Question number five, Mark Patterson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Prime Minister. Does he stand by the government's policies and actions?
The Right Honourable Prime Minister.
Yes, and how refreshing it is to have someone finally to hold this government to account. We stand by reviving Mental Health Care and Wellbeing Commission, shut down by National in 2012, cleaning up New Zealand's waterways, restoring funding New Zealand hospitals and schools, planting a billion trees, a $3 billion provincial growth fund to benefit wealth creators in real New Zealand, not the big end of Queen Street, 100 new locomotives, 900 new wagons, and, dare I say, 800 more frontline police men and women to make our communities safe.
What reaction has he seen to the policies of this government?
An extraordinary range of reactions, actually. Most effusive, complimentary, and some from most unusual quarters seeking to break the door down to attend. They being provincial members of a certain political party. But it's come from the working end of town, not the big end banking end of town. The minimum wage has risen and will be further raised to $20 per hour by 2021, while employment declines. And dare I say it, in June 2019, first home buyers borrowing outstripped investors for the first time.
Mark Patterson.
How has this government increased New Zealand's prosperity? If so, how?
That's a fantastic question. By having a serious understanding of how business works. By having a serious understanding that exports has always been New Zealand's greatest level of dependency, and that is why we have taken export revenue 2017 from $37 billion to, as we speak, $46 billion. Of course, just 4 or 5 years ago, the dollar was going 88 cents US. It's now at 65 cents US, which is the reason why smart farmers are cheering from the rooftops about this new government.
What are some of the significant recent achievements for seniors?
Well,
Order. Some of us take this matter very seriously.
Well, I want to say to certain members, including Nick Smith over there, that next week there'll be a super card cold announcement. We're talking about restoring super fund contributions shut down by the previous government, keeping the age at 65, and doing one thing that other parties in the past have, not ever forgetting that New Zealand seniors built this country and deserve some respect.
The Honourable Grant Robertson.
To the Prime Minister, how many questions has he answered from the opposition since he took over as acting Prime Minister this week, and what explanation would he have for that number?
Alas, in the public interest, and sad to say, the answer has been none. And I put it down to the old adage, don't go to a gunfight carrying a small knife.
Question number six, the Honourable Dr. Nick Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Minister for Māori Development. How many meetings, if any, has she had with Mana Whenua, Tainui, Kingitanga, ministerial colleagues, or any other person in respect of Ihu Mata?
I've had two meetings, each well reported in the media, the first on the 25th of July and another on the 31st of July. And I regularly meet with my ministerial colleagues and talk about a variety of topics. Ihu Mata is likely to have been one of them.
Was financial support being considered or discussed at any of those meetings for purchase of the land?
No.
Does she agree with the Māori King that the Crown should negotiate to purchase the land and return it to Māori ownership?
Mr. Speaker.
A point of order, the Honourable Grant Robertson.
Mr. Speaker, I'm not challenging your ruling, but I'm just questioning around responsibility for the views of the Māori King from the Minister of Māori Development. I'm just not sure quite how that lines up.
Well, no, I don't need to hear. I don't need to hear from Dr. Smith. This is a public opinion about a matter for which this minister has been given responsibility to answer this question in the House, and we often, and in fact, you know, as recently I think as yesterday, Mr. Robertson, you answered questions based on the opinions of outside persons in an area for which you had responsibility, and I think that the question of the Māori King commenting on an issue which affects Māori, the Minister for Māori Development does not have responsibility for that, but can and has been asked for her opinion on the comment, and that is within, I think, a reasonable question. The Honourable
Mr. Nanaimo. Mr. Speaker, the views of the Māori King are a matter for him and of particular note for mana whenua groups. We acknowledge and thank him for his leadership in bringing mana whenua groups together.
Will she rule out the government taking up the advice of the Māori King of the government negotiating to purchase the land and return it to its Māori owners?
Mr. Speaker, it's not a matter of whether I will rule anything or out. This government is trying to find a constructive solution to a complex set of issues at Ehu Mātou, and if he was concerned about getting a really good outcome where there's certainty, I'm sure he would change his line of questioning.
Does the options of a constructive solution to the problem include the taxpayer providing money for the purchase of the land as suggested by the Māori King?
Well, do the options, but anyway. Yep.
I'm not entirely sure how the member jumped to that question based on the primary, but what I can say is that this government is concerned about getting certainty of outcome to all parties involved, and in order to achieve that, we need everybody to come to the table and look for a constructive, innovative solution.
Will the minister visit the site and meet with the protesters?
I think the minister fails to recognise that I have connections. I think the member fails to recognise that I have connections to that area. I don't need to visit a site to know that the rubbish that they created in trying to ram through development without the support of the local community has proven to be a problem, and we have to sort out the mess that he started. Yeah.
Question number 7, Brett Hudson.
My question is to the Minister of Police. How many police
Order.
To date have been deployed?
Both sides.
How many
Start
police...
again, please.
Thank you. How many police to date have been deployed at Ehu Mātou, and what has been the total cost to date of their deployment?
The Honourable Stuart Nash.
Mr. Speaker, under Section 16 of the Policing Act, the role of the Minister and the role of police are very clearly defined. Enforcement, investigation and prosecution are quite properly the responsibility of the Commissioner. This includes a decision to deploy officers to an incident or a dispute. I am advised that the number of staff deployed is operationally sensitive, and I'm also advised that to calculate the cost is a huge task that police were not able to do in time for this question.
Supplementary. What representations have been made to him about increasing the police presence at Ehu Mātou, and by who?
Mr. Speaker, as mentioned, that's a completely operational decision of which I will have no input into whatsoever.
Point of order, Mr. Speaker. I just asked him what representations he'd received.
Yes.
He could have
yes.
said none or some.
And, I mean, notwithstanding the fact that it's not his responsibility, it may be that someone asked him to do something that wasn't his responsibility, and he has a responsibility to answer for that.
There you go. None.
Supplementary. Does he think it has been a good use of police resources keeping an eye on the land occupiers at Ehu Mātou?
Mr. Speaker, what I would say is the District Command of Counties Manukau is a woman called Superintendent Jill Rogers. She is an officer of 26 years' experience. I trust her totally to deploy her officers in a way that she sees fit to maintain law and order.
The Honourable Nanaimo Huda.
When approached by the Minister of Māori Development, did the Minister support the increase of presence of Māori Wardens, a voluntary organisation, in order to better relate to the community on the issues at Ehu Mātou?
No, there is no responsibility from Minister of Police for Māori wardens.
Supplementary.
A point of order, the Honourable Chris Hipkins.
The Minister of Māori Development, who asked the question, was recently asked a number of questions by Dr Smith for which she did not have ministerial responsibility, including negotiations over this very matter, which she doesn't have ministerial responsibility for.
Well, I think, once again, I'm being accused of being soft in the opposition and hard of the government. I'll just wear that. Brett Hudson.
Thank you, Mr Speaker. Is he expecting members of the New Zealand Police Force to receive any further abuse from the protesters at Ahumata?
Mr Speaker, what I would comment on is I think the police have behaved with utmost professionalism and respect in their duties, as do all members of the New Zealand Police Force up and down this country.
Supplementary. Will he visit Ahumata?
Mr Speaker, no.
Question number eight, Runal Turakana.
Thank you, Mr Speaker. My question is to the Minister of Fisheries. What recent announcements has he made about helping the aquaculture industry deliver economic growth and jobs for the regions?
The Honourable Stuart Nash.
Mr Speaker, good news. Yesterday I announced the government's strategy to work alongside and support the aquaculture industry to become a $3 billion industry by 2035. The strategy looks to maximise the performance and value of existing inshore farm footprint and to enable industries to sustainably extend farming into an open ocean and to a modern land-based facilities. Aquaculture contributes significantly to regional development. It generated over $600 million in revenue in 2018 and employs around 3,000 people. We are on track to reach $1 billion in annual aquaculture sales by 2025, but we can deliver more, and this government is committed to helping the aquaculture industry do so.
Supplementary. How is the government investing in building a productive aquaculture industry?
Mr Speaker, the coalition agreement recognised the path aquaculture has been on and the potential for the sector to further deliver economic growth for the regions. Thanks to the investment by my colleague, the Honourable Shane Jones, the Provincial Growth Fund has so far invested around $30 million into aquaculture for the regions. That includes $20 million for a mussel processing facility at Opotiki and around $10 million to establish the National Algae Centre and an Artificial Intelligence Institute, both based out of Nelson. We need an economy where more New Zealanders get to experience the benefits of economic growth, and by investing in aquaculture, we are supporting towns like Nelson, Akaroa, Blenheim, Thames and Bluff, where aquaculture is set to thrive.
The Honourable Dr Nick Smith.
How has the Minister allowing the application for Farm Switch sit on his desk for more than 2 years? Is the greatest opportunity for growing aquaculture in New Zealand?
Mr Speaker, I haven't.
Supplementary. How does the aquaculture strategy balance economic growth and the environment?
Mr Speaker, at the heart of the strategy is sustainability. It sets actions to reduce waste and emissions across the aquaculture production and a plan for how the industry can adapt to climate change. Aquaculture is a primary industry leading environmentally sustainable practices across the value chain. Because of this, aquaculture is well placed to be a bigger part of our future low emissions economy that advances New Zealand's wellbeing.
Question number nine, Andrew Bailey.
Thank you, Mr Speaker. My question is to the Minister of Housing. How many houses has the private sector built in the last 12 months, and how many has the government built?
Mr Speaker.
The Honourable Chris Hipkins.
Mr Speaker, on behalf of the Minister of Housing, data on all completed homes is not centrally recorded. However, drawing on consent data, to the end of July 2019, the total number of new homes consented in New Zealand was 35,472. According to Statistics New Zealand, that is a record number of consents since the mid-1970s. Of this, 2,116 consents were to central government agencies, including Housing New Zealand. That figure does not include Kiwi Build homes built by private developers. I'd like to point out to the member that the government consents have more than doubled from June 2017 to June 2018.
Thank you. Supplementary. Will developers be less likely to buy land and build new houses if there's a possibility that iwi will renege on full and final treaty settlements and attempt to claim back land?
Order, order. The member's going to have to relate it to the primary question.
Will developers be less likely to buy land and build new houses if there's a possibility that iwi will renege on full and final treaty settlements?
Mr. Speaker, I reject the premise of the question.
Yeah, and I should have also rejected the question. It's got nothing to do with houses built in the last 12 months. Further supplementary, Andrew Bailey.
Has she asked for or received any advice on any potential chilling effects from reneging on full and final treaty settlements that would have an effect on new developments in the last 12 months and going forward?
Mr. Speaker, I reject the premise of the member's question.
Well, I just want to say to the member, I'm glad he could understand it because I couldn't.
Thank you.
Because it was looking both backwards and forwards at the same time, which seems very hard.
What does she think is a better use of Uhumatau? Building affordable houses for everyone or returning the land to be used as a reserve?
Order. That has no relationship to the question.
What does she think is a better use of Uhumatau? Building new houses on that land, building new houses on that land.
Even with the extra bit at the end, still didn't get there. Does the member have another supplementary? Order.
Has she had any advice on how many houses will now not be built on Uhumatau that were planned in the last
order,
12 months?
Order. I'm now convinced that that member is being deliberately disorderly. He will stand, withdraw and apologise.
I withdraw and apologise.
Further supplementary.
Will she visit Uhumatau?
Order. The member will leave the House. And the member who interjected then will stand, withdraw and apologise.
Withdraw and apologise.
Question number 10, Dr. Deborah Russell.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Women. What progress, if any, is the government making on increasing the proportion of women in leadership positions in the state sector?
The Honourable Julianne Genta.
Tēnā koe, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to acknowledge Women's Suffrage Day and acknowledge all of the women throughout the history of Aotearoa New Zealand who have led social and political progress of our country. The government has set a target of 50% for women's participation on boards and committees in the state sector by 2021, and we are well on our way to achieving that, with women currently holding over 47.4% of these positions as at December 2018.
Supplementary. What progress is being made in the public service?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Minister for State Services and I launched the action plan to eliminate the public service gender pay gap in June last year, which included milestones for women in leadership. There has been some great progress made in this area, with the number of women chief executives exceeding 50% for the first time. In addition to meeting this milestone, more women chief executives have been appointed to larger jobs, which is a fantastic sign of the kind of progress that we want to see.
Supplementary. Why is this work important?
Having more women and diversity in leadership is not only the right thing to do, but we know that diversity helps organizations function more efficiently. More women in leadership means better decision-making, better organizational resilience, and better performance. It opens up more opportunities for women to succeed and influence, and it is essential to a more inclusive and fair society. We want the boards that are governing in New Zealand to look like the communities they represent.
Supplementary, what about the private sector?
There have been some small gains for women in the private sector as of June this
year. Order. I am going to rule that out because that doesn't relate to the primary question. Question number 11, Dr. Shane Reddy.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the Associate Minister of Health, does she stand by all her statements, actions and policies regarding vaccination and the measles outbreak?
The Honourable Julianne Genta.
Tēnā koe, Mr. Speaker. Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Supplementary.
Did her officials make formal public notification of measles outbreaks in Northland Lakes and Hutt Valley when written questions in her name show these have been part of 9 measles outbreaks in New Zealand this year?
Sorry, Mr. Speaker, I'm not sure I understand the question. I'll ask the member to ask it again,
and I will say I'm also looking very carefully at how it relates to the primary.
Did her officials make formal public notification of measles outbreaks in Northland Lakes and Hutt Valley when written questions in her name show these have been part of 9 measles outbreaks in New Zealand this year?
Again, Mr. Speaker, I'm sorry, I'm not sure what the member means by formal notification. Obviously, the answers have been given, so the officials have acknowledged it. I don't know what he means in addition to that.
Well, I think that was an answer, even if it sounded like a point of order.
Supplementary. When she has stated there is no shortage of measles vaccine supply, why then have officials deprioritised 30 to 50-year-olds from the measles vaccine?
Mr. Speaker, I've been assured by the Director General of Health that there is no problem with supply of vaccines, and the member will be aware that in addition to the 52,000 additional vaccines that arrived this week, the Ministry of Health has announced that 100,000 more have been secured and will be arriving in the coming weeks. What is essential right now in the midst of this very serious outbreak in Auckland is that we ensure that children are the first priority for vaccination because they are the most vulnerable to the illness and they're the most likely to be hospitalised.
When she continues to assert that there is no shortage of vaccines, are people today attending their GP for a measles vaccine being turned away due to vaccine shortage?
Mr. Speaker, as we've covered at length in this House, when this doctake was undertaken, it did find that there was some shortfall in the distribution of vaccines. And so the Ministry of Health, DHBs and PHOs are working to ensure that vaccine is available where it is needed, when it is needed. That is not a shortfall nationally. It's a need to ensure that each GP practice has enough.
Supplementary. When she says there is an additional 100,000 measles vaccines, can she reassure New Zealanders that these vaccines match the measles strains identified in New Zealand?
Mr. Speaker, I can assure the member that the best quality assurance has already been undertaken by MedSafe and by Pharmac, and the Ministry of Health and Pharmac have been working to secure vaccine that will provide immunity for those in New Zealand. But I have to say that the opposition is not doing much to reassure the New Zealand public with their constant scaremongering about a shortfall of vaccines, which is irresponsible but typical of National.
Order. I'm just waiting for people to settle before I call Mr. Goldsmith. Question number 12, the Honourable Paul Goldsmith.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question's to the Minister of Treaty of Waitangi Negotiations. Does he agree that treaty settlements should be full and final?
Speaker.
The Honourable Andrew Little.
Yes.
Is the land at Ihumato in an area covered by a treaty settlement?
The land at Ihumato has been the subject of a number of settlements. It has been referenced in the Waikato Tainui Raupatu Claims Settlement. It has also been referred to in the settlements relating to a number of other hapu and iwi, and that includes Ngāi Taiki Tamaki, Ngāi Te Tamaho, Te Kāwaro Maki, and is currently under negotiation in relation to Te Akitau Waihua. Each of those settlements that have been achieved have made reference to those lands.
Will he give a clear assurance that his government will not undermine the principle of full and final settlements in any arrangements at Ihumato?
Yes.
Does he believe that every generation has the right to reopen past settlements?
Mr. Speaker, I trust the iwi who have reached agreements to settle historical treaty grievances will stand by those settlements. Those who are yet to conclude negotiations or even to commence negotiations and to reach agreement on settlement will also, I trust, stand by those agreements.
Chloe Swarbrick.
Supplementary to the Minister, has he seen, as reported yesterday, that when delivering news of consensus of mana whenua, Kingitanga stated, and I quote, "Mana whenua agreed the return of the land is outside the Treaty of Waitangi settlement process and therefore requires an innovative and modern solution that does not financially disadvantage iwi."
Mr. Speaker, it certainly has been very encouraging that Kingitanga has exercised, I think, a very good leadership role in dealing with what has been a very difficult dispute between iwi and between hapu and within and between mana whenua. And so yesterday's statement and agreement between those parties, I think, is a very positive step forward. But the Crown maintains an interest, if only for the sake of peace and good order, in ensuring that there is a final resolution to the issues surrounding that piece of land that is consistent with maintaining the integrity of the treaty settlements achieved so far, and that's about 88 of them, and those remaining to be achieved.
Supplementary, is he concerned that there is a risk that public support...
Order. I apologise. I thought the member had finished before. The National Party has used all its supplementary questions. Order. Grant Robertson will stand, withdraw and apologise.
Withdraw and apologise.
That concludes oral questions.